You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business.
Asset Manager 91, in its first set of results as a listed company, reported a 7% drop in assets under management as we've seen the coronavirus crisis pummeling global financial markets. Assets under management dropped to £103.4 billion at the end of fiscal 2020. But we've seen asset managers all over the world posting a plunge in AUMs as investors take a risk-off approach in light of an impending recession after economies all came to a screeching halt during lockdowns to prevent the spread of the new coronavirus. CEO Hendrik du Toit joins us now. Evening, Hendrik. Not a choice of your own to list in an environment like this, and I don't think one could have asked for a more volatile time to spin out and do what you did, but it will stand you in good stead. I'd just like to use this moment to reflect on the last year, which was a transformative year for the business that you founded back in 1991. How did you manage the challenge of focusing on not only executing the demerger and listing the new entity, but rebranding and also keeping your staff focused on the end goal here, which is to service your clients?
Good evening, Michael. Thank you for the introduction. No, it was actually our choice. We set Investec on a path for demerger about 18 months ago, and my erstwhile colleague Fani Titi and I were absolutely committed to executing it so that we could have simplified business at Investec, which is focused and can chart its own course, and similarly give 91 the clarity of proposition that we now have, and the actual market conditions in which we were about to do it or which we planned to do it didn't really matter, because 91 raised no capital and had no intention to raise capital at listing. The way we did it was just really the good old-fashioned word focus. We had separated people. There was a project team for the demerger and listing. The marketing people were focused on the rebranding, and the rest of the people were running the business and interacting with clients as they should do and investing money properly. And, remember last year the conditions were a lot more accommodative than right now. COVID struck at the end. So the impact of COVID will only be felt in the year to come.
And when I said not a choice, that you had certainly the choice to pick what would happen come the listing date. Operationally, you've managed to get through this so far without any furloughs, and 21% of your staff are now invested shareholders in the business. So there's good alignment there. What were the early learnings from your Hong Kong office on how to deal with the operational impact on your business from COVID-19?
Yes, our staff collectively now own just over 21% of the business, so we are very long term. And therefore, what we see right now and the reaction to what's going on will always be informed by the long term. And our experience in Asia, where our office had disruptions for over a year, informed our thinking, and we were very clear that we had to be able to operate remotely as a total firm. And that was well drilled by the time the COVID pandemic market reaction came and where the instructions from governments came that we had to vacate offices. Actually, today I'm calling you from the London office because we are in a limited way starting to prepare for re-entry. And we don't say return to work. We say return to the office, because we've all been working very hard over the last 2 months. And the one experience of Hong Kong is you've got to give people choice. Some people have conditions where they prefer to come to work. Other people feel safer at home. That choice and local government regulation is what guides us. So in South Africa, in the office, you'll wear a face mask. In some places, it's not required. In Asia, it's the done thing. And that's really how we have to adapt as a business. But the key point is that we operate as a digital or a digitized business.
And that allows you flexibility. I think many businesses had been pursuing that strategy. The trend has only been accelerated by COVID-19. And I think work from home is an important one. Whether it's work from office or work from home, it's about flexibility. How do you see that panning out over the long term? Do you think work from home might become a more common feature of the way you do things at Investec? We see Twitter saying to its employees, please stay at home. It also means that there's a different cost structure to the business.
Yes, I think the flexible working has always been part of our culture. We've never been a rules-driven organization. We're a principles-driven organization. That flexibility, as you say, is becoming more standard, and those trends are accelerating. So, yes, there are implications. I mean, firms will have smaller premises, but they still need gathering places. I don't think companies will have everyone working in the office at the same time in years to come. But what you do see, and when you talk to other businesses which have been remote businesses for years, like Accenture or the consulting businesses, they always talk about the importance for a place where teams and people can gather. Because we worked very effectively over the last 2 months, and we probably had more client interaction than I've ever seen in such a short period of time. But when you have to bash heads together, when you have to deal with a hard issue, there's nothing like the whites of the eyes. Uh-huh. And I do think firms will have to create some form of facility, but it will be different.
Absolutely. Well put. We've found that in the media game for some time. We could do our jobs remotely, but there's nothing like the occasional morning prayers, we call it, to get the editorial exactly. teams together. And as you say, yeah. look at the whites of the eyes. Now, asset management is a cyclical business. We know. We've seen the market rally from the mid-March sell-off already. Some say we're just in a bear market rally here. Others say there's enough fiscal stimulus to perhaps think of a U-shaped recovery globally. How do you view it? How are you viewing the opportunities over the next 12 months?
I think the way we see it is plan for the worst and hope for the best. But don't impact your long-term strategic path because of cyclical events. And in the end, the pandemic is something that will go away, and in the end, economies will recover. When is a different question. So what we have resolved to do, we have not furloughed or retrenched staff because of the market impact, because we're not running to a one-year earnings target a year away. We're running to build a growth business for the next decade. And that means our long-term investment projects must continue. We must build our technology platform. We must hire the kind of talent that our clients require and maintain that. So our first responsibility was to our people and our teams to make sure they can operate well, and we won't disrupt them. But we don't think the coming year is a year of where you're going to be of huge new opportunities. It's a year of delivering for your clients, doing well, understanding the environment, and then benefiting when the economies normalize. Because in the end, as investment people, we are dependent on the money that our clients bring us. And if the economies don't return to growth and the pension funds have to start to pay out because of massive retrenchments, or individuals have to dip in their savings and sell their mutual funds, then there'll be less for us to manage. So this is a year of battening down the hatches, making sure our investment performance numbers are there for clients, and making sure that we can engage, distinguish ourselves in the way we engage with them. And then we would have laid the platform for long-term and further growth, because 91 is fortunate in that it reaches into all the world's large markets. And the pools in which we fish are very, very large. All we need to do is deliver and provide clients with the kind of experience they would need in these tough conditions.
Now, there is, just in conclusion, Hendrik, a lot of debate about the lockdown in South Africa. Currently, it's become quite a polarizing issue. We see the images of snaking queues of hungry South Africans that are breaking any kind of physical distancing rules just to get food. We've got comments by a respected scientist, Dr. Glenda Gray, that they're seeing malnourished children for the first time in two decades at Barra, obviously cause for concern. We only had a small sort of fiscal resource pool, even with the 500 billion rand package of various measures with which to buy us time to prepare here. And it does look like we've exhausted that budget, so to speak, in terms of time that we could buy. And the argument simply being that we cannot afford to keep the economy shut, or we actually risk destroying the very tax base we'll need to rely on to continue the fight. What's your view here?
Michael, I think we need to consider lives and livelihoods. Not one or the other. And we were very good in our early response, medical response to the pandemic, to avoid it spreading further, and the lockdown was justified. But a lockdown alone without an economic recovery strategy and an immediate stimulus that goes with it, and an effective stimulus, is going to be disastrous if maintained. So I think what we need to do now is really shift the emphasis towards the not only the opening up of the economy, but the economic recovery, and therefore the recovery of our societies. And I would have, instead of devising elaborate plans, I would have just literally passed cash to people in this time when they're unemployed and can't do something. We could easily have delivered it via Capitec or Absa's bank network or something like that, and then make sure that we have adequate or the right environment so that companies re-employ and that companies get out of this and use the low interest rates to build businesses for the future, which can provide not only the tax base but also the employment we need. So what we really need, in short, is put the economy right at the top of our list of priorities next to the public health, and make sure that these two goals are our only two major goals, and that we get out there and do it and stop telling people they can't have e-commerce or make silly rules about what they can buy or not buy or tell them what they can't smoke. I mean, those things that just don't make no sense, and they demotivate the people.
Absolutely. It's about the economy and the health. I'm not a smoker either. I hosted a panel with Johan van Lochrenberg a couple of weeks ago. We're losing R1 billion a month in excise and taxes due to the illicit tobacco industry. It's bizarre.
And this is a time to take hard decisions. You've got to deal with the likes of SAA. You can't just drag it on and prolong the pain. Be decisive and get the economy to face up to, or to point the economy to new growth opportunities. And we've got the low rand now. It's an advantage. And then make sure our tourism sector stays intact so that when the visitors come back, and they will come back, we are ready to take our fair share of that market, because it's still one of the best employment creators. So really, let's focus on what's important, and let's marshal all the resources in the country and create a consensus, as we did when we ended apartheid in 94.
Are you confident? I said that was the last question. Just one more. ABF, are you confident that a crisis like this, I know Bobby Godsell used to say, it's South African nature. We love to walk up to the precipice, have a look over the edge, and only then pull ourselves back. Is this finally the crisis to push through those hard structural reforms to get this economy going again as we look post-COVID to rebuild?
Well, we're hanging over the edge, and we're hanging on by our fingernails. If we could have imposed so much pain on the populace by locking them up in really impossible conditions, why can't we impose the kind of pain we need for a structural adjustment of the South African economy? I don't understand it, and I do hope the politicians will be able to answer that to their electorate, because right now, I don't see the urgency, and we need to see a lot more, a lot quicker, because that's how countries in Asia have dealt with this. They really looked ahead, and they didn't get themselves confused with ideological discussions.
That was 91 CEO Hendrik du Toit calling a spade a shovel with regards to the urgency or the lack thereof to reform the South African economy. And that's a wrap from the team tonight. I'll leave you in the hands of Maestro Richard Koch in Johannesburg and Kianetse in Cape Town. Good night.